originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is indeed the show trainers listen to, and we are happy to have you listening tonight on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201, and everyone tuning in worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. You're listening on your computer or your mobile device. We are happy to have you with us as we kick things off on a brand new edition of the program here tonight. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four. We are with you once again in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios and ready to visit with another young, up-and-coming trainer in this sport, Jude, and somebody who is now working as an assistant, but we know up the road that could likely change, and we could be talking about this trainer being among the top trainers that we have in the sport today.
Yeah, you got to think so. With his background and experience and family connections, he's destined for big things.
Yeah, fortunate enough to welcome young Nolan Ramsey into the program tonight. He stopped by our studio to visit with us on the program here. And Nolan, welcome, my friend. Happy to have you on board.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You spent some time now working with Mike Maker as his assistant. You're getting ready, as a matter of fact, tomorrow morning to head to Woodbine, and you'll spend a few months up there in Toronto, Canada.
We got the call. Myself and my wife, Katie, we're going to leave tomorrow morning, head to Woodbine, and we're going to give Woodbine a shot for the meet.
Yeah, and interesting, when we visited with Nolan and his grandfather, Ken Ramsey, and Katie Clausen back in Barbados in the beginning of March, we were talking about Katie being his fiance, but they are now married, so congratulations, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah, just a little bit over a week. She hasn't left yet, so I guess we're doing all right.
You know, they say if it rains on your wedding day, that's supposed to be good luck. What happens if it snows on your wedding day?
I think that's extra good luck. I'm going to need it.
That's what happened, right?
Just a few minutes before the ceremony, my dad came down and said they were trying to tie the cans on the back of the car, and they could barely see the car. It was snowing so hard. It was crazy. Quite a April for Kentucky.
Yeah, it's been a little brutal here, but looks like we've turned the corner for Derby week, and fortunately or unfortunately, you're leaving tomorrow morning for Woodbine, so you're not going to get to enjoy it.
No, I hate it. I've pretty much made a tradition of going to the Derby. I can only remember once as a kid missing it. I was homesick with strep throat, and actually year before last was the first year I'd ever missed Derby, so I kind of hate to miss it, but I'm pretty excited to go up to Canada as well.
You were telling us a story before we came on air about your trailer and making sure that you were going to have your trailer ready to roll for tomorrow morning. And and just at the 12th hour here, you got a phone call saying, all right, we're good to go.
Yeah, I took it into the shop. I knew it needed some work. And thankfully, they just called me back today and said it's ready to roll. So got my horse and my trailer and my truck all ready. So looking forward to leaving tomorrow morning.
Well, let's start from the beginning. And we'll talk about working with Mike and being around some of the top horses that Mike Maker has had in his barn. And I know you've had the privilege to travel all over the world with those horses. So we'll spend a lot of time talking about that. But let's go back to the beginning. Where did this love affair with horse racing begin for Nolan Ramsey?
It's funny. I have a picture at my house. It's of myself, both my grandparents, and Neil Pessin in the winner's circle at Keeneland. It was April of 97, so that would have made me just over 6 months old. And that was my first time at the races. And then a lot of it came from spending time with my grandfather at his house. We'd sit around, and he'd get us two racing forms, and we'd sit there and bet horses all day. And that's kind of where it started. Then as I got old enough to go to the track, I'd go to the track with him, and he had horses running all over America as well as the world, and he He took me with him wherever he went. I remember going to Woodbine. We went to Royal Ascot. We've been to Dubai. So I got to go a lot of places with him and really, really fell in love with the animal. And actually, I think I was 9 or 10. I started working on the farm, just handling mares and foals until I was big enough to work with the yearlings. So I got to work with them a little bit. And I believe I spent 3 or 4 summers working for him before I started on the racetrack.
Did that racing bug bite you right away at that young age, or was there a time when you said, "Nah, I don't know if this is for me"?
Oh, for sure. It went something about like I had a $2 ticket to win on a horse, and it won, and I was like, "Well, this is pretty cool. I got to figure out how to do this." And honestly, I learned how to handicap. I was probably 7 or 8. I know my parents weren't very happy about it. Funny enough, we'd go to Churchill Downs all the time, and up in the clubhouse, they had a line of windows, and on the far right was a $50 window, but next to it was just a piece of countertop. There wasn't a window there. And I got to know the guy at the $50 window through my grandfather, and I couldn't have been 10 or 11. But if I come up to the counter where there was no window, he'd take my bets just like he was talking to me. So at 10 or 11, I was running bets up and down the stairs for my grandfather and starting to bet on him a little myself. So I really got hooked on the handicapping end of it, and then later came the training.
Yeah, excuse me. We did an interview with your grandfather, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 years ago. I don't know, maybe not quite that far back, but he was talking about your TVG account, and then he gave out the amount you had in the account, which was rather staggering. And I said to Mike, I wish Mr. Ramsey wouldn't have said that, because it's not cool. I didn't want you to like get in trouble or lose your account, you know. But you obviously are a very good handicapper based on the amount that was in your account.
Well, and you learned from one of the best, your grandfather, exactly. Ken Ramsey, one heck of a handicapper.
Exactly. We'd go up to Saratoga in the summers, myself, my grandfather, and my cousin William, and he put us through what he called handicapping school. We'd go to the races all day long. We'd come home with our form, our rag sheets. We'd sit there and handicap 2, 3, 4 hours, however long it took us, in silence at the dinner table. And then when we were done, we'd go race by race and discuss, you know, which horses we liked, why we liked them, how we were going to play the race. So we had a plan for the next day, and we would do that all meet long until it was time for us to go back to school.
How would you describe your grandfather's style of handicapping?
Interesting. No, I shouldn't say that. No, he's a very smart handicapper. He plays each race according to the field size, to the surface, to where it lies in the sequence of other races. You know, the general public likes to come and bet $2 across on this horse, or $2 to place, or something like that. I mean, we had rules when we were betting in Saratoga. You know, we weren't allowed to play a horse to win if he was less than 3 to 1. If it was a short field, we weren't allowed to do, you know, trifectas or superfecta. You know, he's very smart. He knows where the money lies in the pools and how to play it correctly.
So he's much more of a money manager. That's more important to him as who's going to win the race, right?
Correct, until it comes to his horses. We're not allowed to bet anything less than 3 to 1 until he has a horse at 6 to 5, and then and then that rule goes out the window. But no, he's very smart about how he plays, so it's interesting to watch his style and watch other people's styles and how his works and according to others.
And I can imagine, in spending time with your grandfather, that when Ken Ramsey sits down to place his horses in certain races, because he is such a good handicapper, he can handicap the rest of the horses that are going to be competing against him, and that has to be an advantage, isn't it?
Oh, especially on the bigger races, like the stakes races. I mean, you ask him, you know, what do you think about your horse running in this race, and he can sit there and tell you, well, I don't want to run there because so and so's got this horse and that horse, and we can't beat this one. So he's pretty knowledgeable about, you know, the competition out there and where they size up to whatever horse he's wanting to run.
You said that your parents weren't thrilled that you were doing all that handicapping and learning in that light. What did they think of Grandpa teaching the kids how to handicap?
Actually, none of my grandparents, none of their kids, so my dad and uncles, none of them know how to read the form, because my grandmother told them no. And then he taught me how to handicap when I was really young, which I don't I don't necessarily think my parents didn't want me to know, period, just maybe not be gambling at such a young age.
Sure.
But as my grandfather told him, we were not gambling, that we were investing. So that might have had a little light on it, but I think they're okay with it now, because it's not something that's a problem or anything like that, and it's actually come to help me in my career, and when I move forward, it's definitely something I'd have to know. I mean, you can't train a horse without being able to read the form.
Do you think it's good for kids to learn that?
I think so. I mean, it got me. I mean, almost instant. I was hooked on it, and the sport desperately needs young people in it. I like how Keeneland has the, I believe it's called the Betologist, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's a program basically to show people how to read the form. I think it's great. There needs to be more people that read the form and understand it, rather than just coming out and betting on the gray one.
How old are you now, Nolan?
21.
21. All right. So what's the key, in your opinion, to getting new people, young people, interested in horse racing?
I think it needs to be more understandable to somebody who's never done it before. Whereas I grew up in it and I was used to it, and, you know, I knew all about it. I could read a condition book at age 10. I could read the form, things like that. I think that might become overwhelming for somebody that doesn't understand it. So I definitely would push programs like Louisville's Equine Business and Management Program. I think it's a great place to start if you've never had any experience in the horse business. And then as far as what Trax could do, I mean, I really like what Gulfstream's doing. Unfortunately, I think it takes a little bit away from the track and from the horses, but they've built up a large shopping mall around the track. I mean, you can go there even on a dark day and there's people everywhere. So they've always got it in attendance. There's always a crowd, no matter what day of the week it is. And even somebody just stumbling upon the track can get them hooked. So I think that's a good thing to do as well.
Yeah. It's an event.
Right. Right.
It's an event.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've had this question many times in my life about taking kids to the track, and I was a lot like you. I started going to Santa Anita when I was 3 years old, and mm-hmm. I made my first bet when I was 11. That was the year my dad said I was okay to bet. Right. So cashed my first ticket. The rest is history, all that. But, you know, when I was in third grade, I did a book report on a book called Making Money on the Races that my dad had, and the nun that was my teacher, Sister Annette, she called my mom. This isn't proper material for a third grade boy. And my mom actually stuck up for me, which was unusual because nuns were her life pretty much. And, you know, when it came to studying fractions, Sister Annette asked us questions about fractions. I answered every one. Right. Nobody else in class knew anything about it. How do you know so much about fractions? I said, well, I'll show you. So I went up and I drew a track and I put the poles in and I said, this is a 16th of a mile from the finish. This is an eighth. This is a quarter. And she saw the, you know, availability of intellectual pursuits in horse racing. So, and I think it teaches kids too, winning and losing. And, you know, in today's day and age where everybody gets a participation trophy and all that stuff, kids don't know what it's like to win money, lose money, at that adversity to, you know, doesn't come into play. But when you're at the track and you're betting your $2, man, oh man, you just, you know, you don't want to lose that money. That's exactly. That's a fortune to you when you're, you know, an 11-year-old kid, you know. And my brother, he was talking the other night about he used to, like, wait like a Hindu holy man just for the proper spot to bet his $2 because he didn't have another $2 to bet. So I think it's good for kids.
I especially think if they can make an informed decision rather than just guessing, maybe have a little confidence in what you're doing. Definitely could make it more attractive to people that don't particularly know much about the horses. So being able to learn, being able to read the form, I think is going to make horse racing as a whole sport more accessible for everybody.
And a guy like you that's 21 years old, you can kind of be a poster boy, so to speak, for this. You know, when you go out on your own, when your filly runs at Woodbine in your own name and you start doing good, people will look up to you and they'll say, hey, this guy, you know, he's a young guy. He's doing this. This is interesting. I want to be a part of that. I want some of that excitement in my life.
Yeah, it's very cool, especially being around the track. And my younger generation, we kind of find each other wherever we're at. You know, there's a lot of young people in the sport that are up and comers. Bill Mott's son, Riley, for instance, you know, we've become friends, and it's just good to make friends for the next generation. So maybe 20, 30 years down the road, you know, we're all sitting there together and we can remember when we were all assistants and 20 years old and working our ass off at the track.
Yeah.
But, no, I definitely think the sport needs some more young people. So anything we can do to attract them needs to be done.
Talking with Nolan Ramsey here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Nolan, 21 years old, working as an assistant to Mike Maker. Now, I'm going to ask you this question about working with Mike Maker and what that is like. You are kind of the antithesis to Mike Maker. Mike is very reserved, and when you do an interview with Mike Maker, if you can coax a few words out of him, I think you're doing pretty good. Whereas you, great talker, you're very relaxed, you can open up. That has to kind of equal each other out in some ways and help that operation be successful, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. The two of you working together?
Oh, for sure. He's actually known me since I was born. He was working for Lucas. My grandparents had horses for Lucas. When he went out on his own, my grandparents gave him a couple of horses. So they've both been working together for a very long time. He was my first job on the racetrack. He offered me a job during the summer, just walking hots at Saratoga. So I took it and started walking hots, slowly became a foreman, then assistant. And then I've been working with him since I took that job at Saratoga. And, he is a little quiet. You just got to get to know him. But I think what I'm trying to say is I think we jive really well together.
Yeah.
When he only tells me a couple words, I know how to fill in the rest of the sentence.
What makes him so good?
He's a really sharp horseman. And he's worked with all levels of horses from working with his dad, with cheaper horses, or with, you know, he's got his Turfway Park Nickel Claimers and he's got his Grade One horses. And I think that's kind of special. That you get, not only did I get the experience of working with all types of horses from dirt to poly to turf to long distance to sprinters and also claiming. He's a big claiming trainer. He likes to claim and gets claimed off of. And I think the claiming game is great. It really has my interest to see a horseman, you know, take a horse that he thinks he can improve on, what he does to change, whether it's equipment, how he's fed, how he's trained, whatever it may be, and watch that horse go on to big success is really interesting. So if I had to answer the question in just a couple words, I think it's his ability to judge what a horse needs done or needs fixed to improve him.
What kind of teacher is he?
He's a great teacher. He's not one that's going to yell at you and get mad, but it's like when your parents say they're not mad at you, they're just disappointed. That's the kind of feeling I get from him. But if you make a mistake, he'll let you know, but he'll also let you know how not to do it again and what you need to do in the future. He's a man of many words, if you ask for them. Otherwise, he can be a little on the quiet side, but he's great to learn from. He's encouraging. He gives me plenty of opportunities, which I'm not necessarily sure I'd get elsewhere. So being young, being inexperienced, he's put a lot of trust in my hands to give me opportunities I may not have had elsewhere.
When he goes to claim a horse, does he go to the races like every day and check legs, or is he a guy that claims them out of the form, or how does he do that?
A little bit of both. I mean, he watches horses on the track. He keeps up with the races. You know, you could call him up and ask, hey, did you see this race or so? He's always watching the races. So he knows, you know, when he looks at a horse on the form, oh, three starts back, you know, I saw that race, you know, that horse should have won that day, but he got boxed in or whatever. You know, he knows the horse's form from watching the races, but he's pretty big on the form as well.
You mentioned the claiming game, and that's kind of a separate entity within the training business. Mm-hmm. It's a separate skill to be good at the claiming game. Talk a little bit about that.
I think it's a lot of fun. I really do. You know, you see great trainers like Todd Pletcher, Chad Brown, Bob Baffert, guys who've had plenty of success, but they don't necessarily dabble in the claiming game. And you get a guy like Mike who's taken a horse like Bigger Picture and claimed him and gone on to win Grade Ones, or Furthest Land, who ended up being a Breeders' Cup winner. You know, he's had a lot of success doing it. So to me, it's really interesting to watch. You know, you see a horse, you maybe see him training, maybe just based on his form or his pedigree or for whatever reason, you know, he's maybe doing this wrong, and we'll take a stab and see if we can't fix him or change, you know, whatever it is he needs to succeed. Just this past winter, myself and Mike and my grandfather, we all went in together on a horse, and we claimed a horse. It was a Giapponi colt that had been sprinting on the dirt. He had run three times, each time going 5/8 on the dirt. We claimed him 3 weeks later. We turned around and ran him, went a mile on the turf for 50, and he won. So just a, you know, something like that, something that's just, you know, the pedigree screams he needs to be doing something else. You know, it just takes a smart guy to figure all that out and then actually make it happen.
Yeah, who would think a Gio Ponti could sprint on the dirt?
Well, Gio Ponti's can pretty much do anything.
Yeah, there's
they
that
want.
Little horse out there by the name of Dre Fong that was pretty good sprinting, right?
But yeah, you know, that's one of the beauties of claiming horses is you see things like that you just know it's just something that comes to you that this horse, if I do this with them, he's got a heck of a chance to win. Mm-hmm. And when you follow the races as closely as you do, I do, Mike does, you see these things and they pop up on a relatively regular basis, even when you're not looking for them. You know,
right.
I was handicapping a race the other day and I keep a small list because once in a while somebody will call me and say, oh, you know, I want to claim a horse or whatever. And I keep a small list, 3 or 4 horses that I think might be good claims that I see in the form. And I noted this one particular horse and it never goes away. I haven't saddled a horse in about 20 years. 17, I guess it is. But you know, it never goes away from you. You're always looking and and looking at horses' legs. I remember one time my wife got mad at me. We took the kids to Knott's Berry Farm, and I was looking at the horse that pulls the stagecoach, and I said, "That horse got a tendon on him." I said, "I can see why he likes this hard ground here. It's good for his." She goes, "You got to let it go. You just got to let it go." But it never leaves you. It's like it's part of your life, right?
Nolan, you're obviously a very smart kid. You're well spoken. You could do just about anything that you want to do. Why be a horse trainer?
It's funny you ask. Mike reminds me every day maybe I should go back to college. No, I mean, it just started from a young age. I was working with the horses, being around the animal. It's I don't know how to explain it, but it's just something about a horse that, you know, it just draws my attention. It has attraction to me. I can't get enough of it, whether it's, you know, coming home and getting to spend a little time on the farm, just sitting on the fence watching the horses or being in the stable, you know, working with them hands on. But, you know, it's funny. We got married Monday. We took Tuesday off, and Wednesday we were ready to go back to work. And just, I don't really know how to explain it or what it is, but it's just almost it's an addiction. That's what it is.
Have you ever dabbled in doing anything other than horse racing, or a regular 9-to-5 job, so to speak?
No, not really. At Gulfstream, I started a business called High Tide Equine. We have an equine spa on the backside, and we have a service for whoever is interested in it, and that's about as close as a normal job as I've ever had.
Nolan Ramsey here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. As you can tell, he loves what he's doing, and you went back and mentioned the name Riley Mott, Bill's son, who now works with him, and Riley kind of expressed those same sentiments, and I know his dad would be the first one to tell you that this is all he's ever wanted to do. I mean, this is who you are. It becomes part of you, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. It's not really a job. It really isn't. It's a lifestyle. I mean, it's, you know, not many people understand why, you know, on Christmas morning you're over at the barn and everybody else is in bed asleep, and why on Saturday and Sunday mornings we're working. I mean, it's 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and you know, there's guys that have been doing this a lot longer than me that can tell you better, but I mean, it's every day. It's, you know, no excuses. You can't do anything about it other than and just immerse yourself in it. And it's a lifestyle.
We started the interview talking about the fact that you're going to head to Woodbine tomorrow to train horses there for Mike Maker. You'll take a string up there. You'll be the one responsible. I know you've done that in the past. When we were in Barbados in March, you were the one that was running the show. Mike wasn't there.
Yeah,
that's an awesome responsibility. Describe your feelings sitting here the day before you go up there to undertake something like that.
Oh, it's an honor and a privilege. You know, we've shipped in the Woodbine and run and come right back, and we've had some success up there as well. But to take a string to a different country, to somewhere you've never you know, stabled at before, and to him, he's really, you know, kind of told me just, you know, you figure it out. And I appreciate that, and I mean, it shows that he's got some trust in me to do that. And They give us, I believe it's 22 stalls, so we hope to fill up the whole barn and have a good meet. And you know, I'm really looking forward to it, but to be the one to start a string somewhere is pretty special.
Yeah, it's got to be super exciting. And, you know, the country thing is so unique. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you say, going to a different country, it's Canada, I know,
right.
But it's still a different country. And that is an honor and a privilege that somebody's going to let you take their horses somewhere else. Of course, you've got the Barbados experience under your belt and have been doing that for a few years. So
how many of those horses are going to be owned by your grandfather?
He's probably got 7 or 8 at this point. He had a couple Ontario breds to start with, and this winter he'd claimed a few at Gulfstream, and so I think we're going to take quite a few of his up there. I know he's got a couple that he's pointed towards the Queen's Plate, so we got our work cut out for us this spring, but he's going to have probably roughly about half the barn.
That's another thing that your grandfather's so good at claiming is long-term claims, like finding horses to run in the claiming crown and finding horses to run in Canada or whatever. He's got a great mind for that. Do you ever talk to him about that?
Oh yeah. It was funny. We claimed a horse out at Keeneland just the other day, and he's already pointing him for the claiming crown in December, and we're only in April, but he's always got his stakes book nearby. He always knows, what kind of horse it takes to win those races. So he's constantly looking for good claims. He never really stops. He goes through the forum every day, and he'll call us and want to claim one at Keeneland. He'll call us and want to claim one in Del Mar, Oaklawn. He looks everywhere. So anywhere he thinks he can pick up a good horse, he's all about it.
There's a saying that says, don't work with family. How about training for family? What's that like?
Tough.
Yeah?
No, I don't know. I don't necessarily think he holds me to higher expectations, but I feel he does. I always want to do good for him. I always work hard for him. And then when we're repaid with a victory like in Barbados or the Queen's Plate, something big, it's definitely a little more special to be able to do it for him. So it's nice to work for him, and sometimes it can be challenging, but definitely a privilege.
Yeah, and he told us in Barbados that the one thing he's most proud of is that you're doing all of this on your own. Yeah, your name is Ramsey, but you're not using that to your advantage. You are hustling, you're getting out there like anybody else, and you are building this name and this reputation on your own.
Maybe he doesn't realize it, but I'm a lot like him. He did it all himself too. He was the first one in the family to ever have anything to do with horses. And really the first huge success in our family, and he did it all himself. He actually named a horse after himself, self-made man. So I kind of follow in his footsteps in that sense that I want to make a name for myself. I don't want anybody just to hand me anything. I want to earn it.
Yeah, he also named a horse after you, which we're going to talk about in the second half of the program. We'll do that when we come back. You're listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. It's on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We're visiting with young Nolan Ramsey. Stay with us. Back with more right after this.
Selected sales, superior results. Nominate now to Fasig Tipton's selected yearling sales, which are stronger than ever. The July sale for precocious athletic yearlings, the prestigious Saratoga sale, where leading buyers have searched for their next champion or classic winner for nearly 100 years, and the New York bred sale, which offers the cream of the New York bred crop. Learn more and nominate at FasigNoms.com. Fasig Tipton selected yearling sales, stronger than ever.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Exaggerator, Curlin's all-time leading son, is still the last 3-year-old colt to win 3 Grade 1s in a single season, with extreme wins in the Santa Anita Derby, Preakness, and Haskell.
Exaggerator, an
absolutely brilliant victory in the Santa Anita Derby.
A tremendous performance from Exaggerator.
But Exaggerator has turned the tables. He has won the Preakness Stakes.
His extreme foals are arriving now.
A leader in turf racing across North America, Woodbine, one of the world's most dynamic gaming, racing, and entertainment companies, returns for championship thoroughbred horse racing in April. Committed to racing excellence and innovation, Woodbine is proud to offer the Graded Stakes Bonus Program for the 2018 racing season, allowing horsemen and women alike more opportunities to race against the best of the best. Woodbine continually strives to bring the most competitive and high-quality fields to the horse racing community and to its fans, and with this offer, now is your chance to race with champions. Owners, trainers, and horses come for the action and excitement. They come for the finest in hospitality treatment and dining. They come for the competitive purses. They come to Woodbine, the Northern Gem, transcending the sport of racing today for tomorrow. To learn more about the Graded Stakes Competition Bonus, call the Woodbine Race Office today.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And there are no more turns into Gold Cup. And it's Infrared in front on the outside here, Shining Copper. Sir Dudley Diggs is thundering down the middle course. Infrared is hanging tough. Shining Copper is trying desperately. Sir Dudley Diggs on the right hand drive. It's Sir Dudley Diggs to Lord Samuels. 3 feet in Shining Copper second. Infrared is third. Gold set. Thank you, Lord Grand Cup. Beautiful. Just above it.
Well, that's what it sounded like on the first Saturday in March when Sir Dudley Diggs stormed home to win the Barbados Gold Cup. It was a race you heard right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network as part of our exclusive coverage. Dean Springer had the call, and Sir Dudley Diggs racing in the red and white Ramsey silks, outrunning Shining Copper, who was also in those same red and white silks. And it was a special day for Nolan Ramsey, who was there training those horses who race in the name of Mike Maker. And we're going to continue that visit with Nolan in just a minute after we do welcome everybody back to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Mike Pennant, Jude Feld in our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. And don't forget, if you missed any portion of this show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows right there at horseracingradio.net. Dean Springer bringing them home. Exciting stuff in Barbados. And to be there was really special. And nobody knows that better than Nolan Ramsey. I could see you smiling from ear to ear when that clip was playing, Nolan.
Yeah, he did a tremendous job with the call. It gives me goosebumps even now when I hear it. But it was quite the experience. It really was.
And to win it for your grandfather. And he had been on a bit of a losing streak in Barbados. Let's face it, he won it 2 years in a row. Then he was beaten 2 years in a row by Dorset, who he turned the tables on this year. And not only does he win it with Sir Dudley Diggs, he also runs second with Shining Copper. Pretty special.
Yeah, it was. We were there almost 19 days in total. And the entire time, Sir Dudley Diggs had been doing great. He thought he was the winner before the race was ever run. And Shining Copper done really well, too. Unfortunately, he didn't get quite the cleanest trip we were hoping for. But Sir Dudley Diggs, he wowed us all. So it was really special to be able to run 1-2 in a big race like that, especially for my grandparents.
Yeah, it was super cool. I mean, Sir Dudley Diggs, I mean, he's a horse I'll never forget. I've seen him win in three different countries. And that was a first for me, that to be there when he's won three times. And just... a really cool horse, and I know it was super cool for you to win that race. Your grandfather, he really was in a slump. He pulled out all the stops. He sent the Queen's Plate winner and a horse that placed in a Grade One to Barbados. That was by far the best, I think, the best Barbados Gold Cup field ever assembled. Mm-hmm. Your horses had pretty much everything to do with it, and it was just a great day. It was really phenomenal.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Going back to Sir Dudley Diggs, he's such a cool horse. We started him. The first time I had him in a Gulfstream in the winter. and he was still a maiden. And I believe we ran him, it was two or three times at Gulfstream, and each time finished second or third. And it wasn't until Keeneland in the spring when he broke his maiden. And I got to work with him then. And I actually, I took him myself in the truck and trailer, drove him up to Woodbine for the plate trial stakes. He ran third that day, and we decided to go on to the Queen's Plate. And I got a pretty special experience for the Queen's Plate. We went up almost 2 weeks in advance. We trained him there and stabled there just with him and a couple other horses that were going to run Queen's Plate Day. So I got to work with him all the way up into the Queen's Plate, and then that's when he really impressed us all, and he won the Queen's Plate, and that was such a cool experience.
Yeah, great horse, and looking forward to seeing what might be next for Sir Dudley Diggs. What's he pointing toward?
We have a couple different options. Kind of depends on what my grandfather wants to do with him, but eventually he'll end up back at Woodbine with me for the summer.
Yeah. Nolan Ramsey here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nolan, I mentioned earlier that you also have a horse named after you. That was Nolan's Cat, who ran right. in the Belmont Stakes, ran third as a maiden in the Belmont Stakes. Pretty right. special.
Yeah. Romans trained the horse at the time. It was named after me, and that was kind of my, I believe that was the first horse that, the second horse that was named after me, the first being Rolling with Nolan. And Zito had him, so that was I was too young to really remember that. But then Nolan's Cat came along, and that was actually the first time I'd ever got to go to the Belmont Stakes, so that was cool, just being able to be there for the Belmont Stakes and then have a horse in there owned by your family and named after yourself was pretty cool. And he went off at some huge odds, whatever it was, as a maiden, and ran a really good third, so it was a pretty cool experience to do all that. And I still have the sign they put in the back of the stall that says, you know, the horse's name on. I still have that in my room. I have his Belmont Stakes webbing laying under my bed, and plenty of pictures to go with it as well.
Yeah, he was a cool horse, and that's phenomenal to have a horse of that quality, you know, named after you. Sometimes some of the horses that people name after their kids or grandkids or whatever, they're just horses, but that was a pretty special horse.
I had all my cousins beat. I had Rolling with Nolan named after me, who Zito had and was a stakes winner, and I had Nolan's Cat, who was a graded stakes placed. And I had them all beat until my cousin Stephanie had Stephanie's kitten. Yeah. She put me to shame. So.
Yeah, she's going to be tough to beat in perpetuity, probably. Mm-hmm. She was awesome.
Yeah, that was a pretty special moment, too, for the entire team, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then going back to Barbados, to be able to take the same horse I worked with from a maiden to winning the Queen's Plate. And actually got to experience Fort Erie for the first time, which what a cool place that is. And then on back to Woodbine for the third leg of the Triple Crown. So I got to take that horse from his maiden race to the Queen's Plate, to several races in between, and then on down to Barbados and then win with him down there. It was really special.
We tell people all the time that Barbados in general, the people are just unbelievable. The culture is great, but the racing is a lot of fun too. And it's really an event. It's same thing at Woodbine. It's a spectacle when you go to a race like the Queen's Plate, and they have the Royal Mounted Police and everything, and the pageantry that goes along with it. Same thing at Barbados though. Talk about being in Barbados and what it was like.
You come down there, and from the second the horses stepped foot, in the stable area, there was constantly people at the fence taking pictures, asking questions, wanting Ramsey Farm silks, pins, and hats, and you feel like a superstar down there. I mean, it's like, especially going down there with the big name horse, it's like you're showing up at Churchill Downs on Derby Day with the favorite. I mean, everybody wants to talk to you, wants to give you pointers, wants to, it's just great. And training every day, there was always people out there watching. And then race day was just, it's something else. I mean, they line the track so with so many people, you can't see the rail. It's all the festivities, the parades, everything. It's really special.
Yeah, your grandfather's like Mick Jagger when he goes down there. I mean, people are lining up. They want his autograph. The they want pins, and the little kids too. They love him. I mean, he's such a celebrity when he's in Barbados. It's really cool watching that, and he's made a name for himself because of the fact that he's participated now for what, like 5 years in a row.
I believe this is the fifth year. Yes.
Yeah. So you know, it's great. And he really enjoys it. And he's gotten be friends with a lot of the people down there, and, mm-hmm. and they're always taking him out for social events or inviting him to their house or whatever. So it's just a wonderful experience. We always encourage people to go and go through that experience for themselves. And I wish everybody could take a horse down there. I keep looking for one of these days.
No, it's funny you mentioned that. Just, yeah, I'm not quite as, I don't know, outgoing as he is. He's more of one to just put himself in any situation and be comfortable with it. And, you know, I'm not necessarily reserved, but not necessarily the one to go out there like he does. And just to sit back and kind of watch him enjoy it. And as much as he does, I think this year he come down for 10 days. And even after the race, stayed a few extra days just to enjoy the country itself. And just to get to watch him and see how much fun he has with it all, it means a lot to me as well.
Yeah. He and your grandmother, both, she is there by his side. And in most of those big races, she didn't make the trip to Barbados this year, but to see them and the way that, you know, that they are when they're together and the way they enjoy this sport together is pretty special.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my grandmother wasn't able to make it down to Barbados this year. And I think we had a few family members that were going to come and at the last minute didn't. So it ended up just being him and me and Katie. And, you know, to have all the time we had, just the bond, and, you know, he come out to the barn in the morning, which, you know, he comes out every now and then, but not too often. And just to be able to spend time with him and then, you know, win the race for him was real special. And I think it meant a lot to him as well.
Yeah, we touched on it earlier. And for people that are just joining us, Nolan and Katie Clausen, now Katie Ramsey, married just about a week ago and married here in Lexington. And now they're getting ready to head to Woodbine to run horses for Mike Maker and run that operation north of the border. And they'll leave tomorrow to do that. They'll take their dog, they'll take their trailer, and they'll be on their way. And you told us earlier you didn't expect to have a horse, you didn't expect to have a dog or a trailer. You've got them all.
Or a wife.
Or a wife.
When I started on the track, I saw how hard it would be to have a family, and, you know, with all the moving and all the expectations you have at work, I thought it would be challenging for someone to have that sort of to family. And then I said to myself, well, you know, there's no way I'm going to have a dog either. There's just too much moving. It's too much hassle. And I said, and there's no way I'm taking a horse with me either. So tomorrow morning, my wife, my dog, and my horse and I are all going to Woodbine. So kind of a change of events, I guess.
Yeah, funny the way life works. And Katie, look, an accomplished jockey. She was up for an Eclipse Award as mm-hmm. leading apprentice after her campaign last year. And she only rode, I guess, about 8 months, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, she came off horse in the morning and suffered a concussion, and before she started riding races, she had broken her neck. So, a couple of pretty serious injuries, and I think she enjoyed galloping in the mornings more than riding races anyhow. So, I think working with me and getting to do what she likes in a relaxed fashion is pretty good for her.
Obviously, with all of those issues that she's had from the health perspective with the fall and those things that have occurred, do you worry about her when you give her a leg up or she goes out there and gallops a horse?
For sure. I worry about it every time. I mean, it's, you know, never a good thing. You know, when anybody gets hurt, especially when it's your wife, and knowing her past medical history, it's a pretty big risk. She drives me nuts. It's like you put her on a bad horse and then instead of, you know, putting somebody else on it, she wants to get on it, and then you get in trouble if you don't put her on it. So she drives me nuts in that sense that she likes to cowgirl up and take the tough ones, but she really enjoys it. So getting to see her enjoy what she does is good too.
What makes her such a good rider?
She's very patient. She gets along with horses that most people don't. You know, I got my own filly in. She's a two-year-old fresh off the farm. The first day, you know, she wanted on the horse, and, you know, she wasn't anything too bad, but she just got the horse to relax. She's got a very good hand. She gets a horse to do what she wants, and she teaches him in the process as well. She definitely doesn't let a horse get away with something he shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, I don't like to make blanket statements, but I've always found that the girls seem to get along better with the horses, and they seem to have more of a care about them. They want to see them develop. I don't know, you know, where that comes from, but it's just more natural. I think that the girl riders, they seem to take more time, maybe because the guys are trying to make a living at it, and they just want to get on as many horses as they can. But the girls seem to go for the quality of the experience with the horse in the morning, and they get their favorites and stuff. I always said a barn can only have one queen, so remember that. That's good advice.
No, it's funny, and I absolutely agree with what you're saying. I mean, this winter alone, I had three different girl riders, and here at Keeneland now I have two with me, and I'm taking two female riders to Woodbine as well. I think there's certain horses that, you know, a bigger, stronger guy just needs to get on, horses that just need a stronger rider, somebody that's going to fight with them a little more. But I always think it's important to have female riders in the barn. They just, for whatever reason, they just get along better with them.
And visiting with Nolan Ramsey here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. He is working as an assistant for Mike Mager and getting ready to head to Woodbine to handle that string up there over the course of the spring and into the summer. Nolan, what goals have you set for yourself as you look forward to your career?
My immediate goals is to have some success at Woodbine for Mike and for my family as well as our other owners. It's kind of a leap into new territory, so to succeed there, whether that be winning, you know, a certain percentage or a certain number of races or certain races in particular, I'd like to succeed there. But for long-term goals, I just kind of like to make a name for myself for now. I don't have any plans of when I'm going to go out on my own or you know, really what lies ahead for me, but I'm real happy where I'm at now. So just kind of like to make a name for myself, and people recognize me as, you know, oh, he's a pretty sharp horseman, or he knows what he's doing, rather than just, oh, that's, you know, Ramsey's grandson, or that's that guy that works for Mike. I kind of like to make a name for myself, and eventually I do plan on going out on my own. Eventually I do want to train. That's really what, you know, I really want to do. But for now, I'm still learning from Mike and still have a lot more to learn. You know, I've only been on the track a short time in the grand scheme of things. So no rush on going out on my own. Just want to take it all in and have all the opportunities and take advantage of them and get as much experience as I can.
You know, most people don't know that. If you don't win 20% of your starts, your grandfather's going to fire you. So we know the Ramsey rule. Mm-hmm. We've been told this time after time after time. So you have to get to a level of expertise where you're sure you can win 20%.
It's funny.
It's going to be very embarrassing for both of you.
Well, I was asking him if being his grandson, if I got grandfathered in, you know, do I get a family break? And he said, absolutely not.
2%.
Yeah. Right.
18.
But no, he holds everybody to a pretty high standard. And I think that I've worked with some good people that are going to put me in a position to be able to succeed for him.
You've had so many unbelievable moments already working with Mike and saddling horses like Sir Dudley Diggs, who we talked about, and Shining Copper. I mean, those are just outstanding horses. Is there one race, one victory that stands out more to you than some of the others?
It'd probably have to be Sir Dudley Diggs in the Queen's Plate. That was, you know, I was up there for almost 2 weeks before the race, me and one other person that works for Mike as well, and it was just the two of us. You know, she was getting on the horses, and I was grooming them and training them, and it just the way it worked. You know, the horse wasn't a favorite. It was kind of a surprise that we won. He'd got beat in the plate trial, and he got beat a few lengths as well. So, you know, we didn't really have an expectation of him winning, and then just the way the day went as well. We had several other horses running in the undercard and stakes races, and we had no luck at all that day. Just an absolutely horrible day until the Queen's Plate, and I think he went off at like 15-1 or something. He had a bit of a price to him, and just the way he ran, it wasn't a wire-to-wire victory. It was an exciting win, you know, a closing victory, and got the favorite on the line. I think we won by 3/4 of a length or something. But you know, my family was up there, I was there. It was just special. It's something to remember.
Let me turn this around on you, Nolan. How about the race that if you could have one race back and you could say, man, oh, we almost had that one. What was that one race?
Man, that's a tough question. It would probably be the 2017 EP Taylor Stakes at Woodbine. We had taken Kitten's Roar up, and she had been doing so good, and we just knew this horse was going to win. She liked the softer turf, and it just rained all day long. We loved it, and then we come running, come flying at the end. I think we only got beat a length or maybe a length and a half or something, but she just ran so good, and we should have won that race, so that's definitely one I'd like to try again at.
Yeah, the losses sometimes stick out more than the victories.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, they can bother you a little bit. But
you know, we've talked to trainers that talk about getting too high or getting too low and trying to keep yourself in that happy medium zone. Mm-hmm. Has that been a bit of a learning experience for you, or have you been able to adapt to that okay?
Oh, definitely. When I first started out, when we won, I was, you know, all the way up, and then when we lost, I was, you know, oh, screw this, I'm going home. But I think Mike's been a big teacher in that too. You know, he shows excitement when he wins, but he doesn't get too wild, and when he loses, he takes his loss with respect. You know, always congratulates whoever won, and he's a real sportman, a really good sport about it all, and I've learned from him to, you know, not to flaunt your wins, but to be happy and be proud, and not only of yourself, of your team and the horse. And I've learned that from him. And then I've learned when you lose, you congratulate the winner, and you keep your mouth shut and try again harder.
Yeah.
I remember one day we were covering the Claiming Crown, and he was standing there. His wife was there. We had a kid in a stroller and maybe the other one running around or whatever. And he decided to watch the last race on the television set right by where Mike and I were doing the show from. And your grandfather's horse wins the race, and he looks at his wife and he shrugs his shoulders and he walks to the winner's circle. It was like, wow, this has been a day, right? And it was really a cool moment, because I don't think he expected to have that kind of a day. Right. I know there was one race your grandfather's horse was stuck out in the outside post at Gulfstream, which is supposed to be, you know, a death knoll automatically, and he was iffy about that one. That horse won from the outside post. I mean, everything was just going right. It was one of those days where
I think he ended up winning four or five that day. It was unreal.
Yeah.
And then you talk about losses that stuck out, and this past Claiming Crown was a little rough, and we had a filly named Peru in, and I still to this day think she won. She come running it. It was so close, and you go back and you look at the picture, and she still thinks, you know, you still think you won. And, you know, we were all celebrating, you know, congratulating each other. And then they put up the result, and we had lost. And it was a pretty rough day all in all. And then we finally won one. And all Mike said was, well, about time, I guess. And went and got his picture made and went on home, like, no big deal. And, you know, it's cool to watch him and how level-headed he can be about, you know, really things that, you know, most people get pretty excited about or be pretty upset about, he takes in stride.
What's more difficult, to get beat in a photo finish by a nostril, or to have a horse that you think is going to run well and they just get hammered?
Oh, that's tough. I hate it when we get beat by a nose. I sometimes say I'd rather get beat two or three than get beat by a nose, but at the same time, it's pretty disappointing when you have high hopes for a horse and it shows absolutely nothing. At least, you know, when you get beat by a nostril, you know you were right and you'd spotted the horse right, and the horse was, you know, on its game that day. And it just stings more when you get beat by a nose, I guess. But probably more disappointing when your horse doesn't run the way you think it's going to.
Mrs. LaCroix, David LaCroix's mom, Meadowbrook Farm in Florida, she told me one time, and I've never forgotten it, she said, if you're going to get beat, the ideal place to finish is third, because then you can't really say you could have won the race, but you still get almost as much money as you do when you finish second. That was her theory. And I always tried to remember that, you know, when a horse got beat or whatever, you know, maybe Mrs. LaCroix had a good idea there. She was quite a character.
Nolan Ramsey with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nolan, hard to believe this has been such an enjoyable visit. We're almost done with the hour, only a few minutes left. Always like to end by talking to trainers about, well, something that people may not know about them. So when you aren't around horses and you're not at the racetrack, which is very, very rare, what other hobbies, what other things do you like to do?
Well, it seems like most of my time is at the track. you know, something I really enjoy. It's not necessarily not to do with the horses. It's still equine related, but I enjoy just taking some time and then going to the farm and just doing nothing, sitting on the fence, watching the horses. It's just really relaxing. I think the racetrack, as much as I like it, it's a very high strung environment. That's always, you know, constant go, go, go. And when you can get that, you know, even if it's just an hour or two or a day or whatever it may be, to just, you know, go somewhere and relax, I always end up at the farm. You know, whether it's driving around with my grandfather and looking at whatever, or just sitting there and watching the horses run in the field, it's what I like to do, is just find a happy place and relax.
Yeah, nothing beats that, huh? Because it's a lot of tension.
It is.
A lot of tension and pressure, and sometimes you don't even realize it when you're in it. But, man, when you get that rare chance to be away, mm-hmm. it just feels good.
Yeah, my wife constantly reminds me that I'm 21 and have gray hair already. So she'll pick through them and say, "Oh, I found one. Here's another." Thank you. Yes, I know. Yeah, I know.
But you have hair.
Yeah, I've got hair.
Yeah, for some of us, that's a thing of the past. So.
But yeah, it's definitely a high stress environment. So if you can get time just to relax and enjoy yourself, that's what I like doing the most.
Any other sports that you follow?
I like college basketball quite a bit. Being a Lexington native and from Kentucky, I always root for the Wildcats, and we all hate the Cardinals. So when I can cheer on my Wildcats and watch them on, whether it be at Rupp Arena or on TV, I enjoy watching college basketball.
He's not worried about training for anybody that lives in Louisville, is he?
I guess not.
Throw caution to the wind. Yeah, why not? Yeah, I know your grandfather's a big fan of the Cats, too.
Oh, yeah, he's got season tickets, and he started me out young as a Cats fan. So we learned at a young age not to like the Cardinals.
And Big Blue Kitten. What about that horse? He was fantastic.
Uh-huh. Yes, he was. It was good. We always enjoy going to the UK games. We're all big UK fans.
it's great stuff. It's a family affair. He is Nolan Ramsey, and he's with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Nolan, this has been just such an enjoyable visit. We talked about this after we had a chance to visit with you and your grandfather and Katie in Barbados, but, you know, there's a saying that says this person gets it, and you just seem to get it. So keep getting it done as we move forward, and all the best at Woodbine. Safe travels up there, and good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Smart kid.
No question. Yeah. Send him some horses, people.
Yeah. Can't wait to see him go out on his own someday, too. Going to be really, really special. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this Trainer Talk show and all of our shows. They're there for you. Horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Plus, you can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. For our producer, Lee Delapina, in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studio, for Jude Feld, and for our special guest, Nolan Ramsey, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.